Blog Talk Radio.
Start it.
Johnny on the track.
Started from the bottom, now we're here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team fucking here. Started from the bottom, now we're here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team.
Yes, yes, yes. What is going on, everybody? Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of Inside the Octagon. I am your host, Kalani Lua, along with my co-host, Leo Showers. Leo, my man, what's going on with you, brother?
Hey, what's up, brother? Just living, man. Happy to be here.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. When we do our shows in the middle of the week, I know, obviously, we're not a quote-unquote breaking news, but it certainly is one of those times where, you know, we don't cover the event right away, but as the week goes on, news comes out, other things, facts come up that we're able to talk about. But it does seem like it's been a while since we were last on the air to talk. And last time we was on the air, we were talking about a fairly interesting but not overwhelmingly MMA weekend. And actually, these cards weren't as bad as maybe we thought, especially UFC in Poland. What did you make of these weekend's fights before we get into them? Just, you know, sometimes we look at a fight card and we say, and sometimes those actually turn out to be some of the best cards from top to bottom.
Yeah, a lot of the times, you know, these little cards that could, you know, they draw you in with, you know, maybe one interesting fight or one interesting fighter that you want to tune in and watch. And then you always end up getting surprised by, hey, you know, I never heard of this fighter before, but, you know, they're kind of interesting to me now, and I want to follow their career, you know, from this point moving forward. And I think we saw a lot of that this past week, and especially, like you said, in the UFC card, you know, a lot of these relative unknowns, you know, a few people were making their UFC debuts, but there was something that definitely caught your eye in a lot of these fights. So, I mean, overall, I think it was a product that ended up delivering, especially for, you know, a UFC Fight Pass card.
No, certainly indeed. And if you look at the fight card for UFC Fight Night in Poland, 11 fight card, 7 fights did go to decision, but we had some pretty interesting matchups here. We had we had 2 very nice TKO finishes in the prelim cards. I thought it was good for the prelims to get some finishes there. And then on the main card, man, oh man, did we get some nice finishes here. And before I talk about one that's going to be on the UFC highlight reel forever, I want to talk about the main event, and we might have a new star on our hands. I'm talking about Darren Till with the huge upset over Donald Cowboy Cerrone via first-round TKO. I mean, Darren did say if the Cowboy stands with him, he's going to make him pay, and the Englishman did not prove us wrong. He did not hold back, and man, this was a surprise to many, obviously, if you're a Till fan. Not Leo, what did you make of the young upstart Till pulling off this tremendous upset against the toughest opponent of his career?
I got to say, color me surprised. I really did not see this coming out of Darren Till. And, you know, as I was watching the fight, you know, in the first couple of seconds, you saw the huge, huge size advantage that Darren Till had. I mean, his back was just humongous compared to Donald Cerrone. And he even said it himself after the fight. He says, hey, man, I'm a 205er cutting down to welterweight, so I'm here to overpower people. And that's exactly what he did to Donald Cerrone. I mean, he made Donald Cerrone look pedestrian in that fight. So color me impressed by Darren Till. He really was not on my map. I was overlooking him, you know, as we spoke last week. You know, is Donald Cerrone overlooking Darren Till? I thought, no, not in a million years. But Donald Cerrone looked, you know, just kind of, like I said, pedestrian in that fight, and Darren Till just absolutely put it on him. And like you said, he got the biggest win of his career, and now he's on a lot of people's maps in the UFC, and he even cut a nice little promo after the fight. So really, really happy for Darren Till, and I can't wait to see what's next for this young man.
Darren Till, 24 years old, they call him the Gorilla, from England, 6 feet tall. I didn't like what he said about, you know, he's a 205er cutting down to 170, merely for the fact that we've discussed on this show and obviously on other platforms as well, it's been discussed about the whole weight cutting issue. And, you know, we've talked about how fighters always try to look for the advantage to be the bigger, stronger guy. And, you know, it's very unfortunate because, you know, lo and behold, knocking on wood here, if the day ever comes that Darren Till has struggles with weight, didn't have a good weight cut, gets sick, and can't shed the pounds, and then he misses weight or whatever, you know, it's really going to be, once again, on him trying to drop two weight classes down. But before jumping into, you know, that aspect of it, I was very impressed with this young man due to the fact that he was the main event against the toughest opponent of his career. And sometimes we've seen fighters kind of fold under that pressure a little bit, come out a little stiff, a little hesitant. But Darren Till, he looked like he belonged. I mean, I'm not trying to sit here and say this guy deserves to be, you know, he jumped up from not being ranked in the top 15 to being ranked number 8. I'm not trying to say he deserves a number one contender's bout next, but he certainly showed that he's got the poise, at least in this fight, that for other future fights, unless maybe it's a title fight or a really big, let's say, money fight, if he works his way up to George St. Pierre, Conor McGregor, Diaz, whoever, outside of that, he certainly showed that until I get to that point, I'm okay in this position. I mean, this is a guy whose kickboxing record, 44-0, no draws, no contest, with 33 knockouts. So, I mean, he's been ripping through MMA, 16-0 with one draw, 10 knockouts. And, you know, with Cerrone, hold on. Before we talk about Cerrone, but Darren Till, as you said, back looked massive. He's physically a bigger guy, and at 24 years old, him making his weight cut, I think it's very good for him. Obviously, he gets old. I hope he moves up. What did you make of Donald Cerrone? Even though, you know, it was a small sample size, you say he looks kind of pedestrian. This isn't the first time we see Cerrone kind of have, you know, a main event slide or come into a match, and he just looked like, where's Cowboy at? He didn't look like Cowboy Cerrone. He looked like Donald Cerrone. What's going on with Donald Cerrone? I mean, was it just Darren Till just being a better man, or is there maybe a mental block Cerrone still hasn't figured out how to get over when he's put in the big main event spotlight?
I think it's certainly a little bit of both. You know, we talked about Cerrone last week about, you know, he needs to do these other activities outside of the cage to just kind of keep his head in check, basically. And we talked about how he's a slow starter, and, you know, sure enough, Darren Till, you know, the best chance that he had was to go in there and lay it on Donald Cerrone early, and that's exactly what he did, right? So I think we've seen a lot of Cerrone that he needs a round or two to just kind of get going. He needs to get hit a couple of times before he realizes, you know, he's in a big main event fight. And, you know, I don't want to say that Donald Cerrone wasn't prepared physically, because I think physically he looked fine, but there was certainly he was a step behind everything that Darren Till was doing. And, you know, it was just a guy playing checkers against a guy playing chess. So there was certainly a mental lack of preparedness that I noticed from Donald Cerrone this past week. And I think we've seen it before, you know, especially going back to his most recent title fight at 155 against Rafael Dos Anjos, where, you know, Donald Cerrone was talking all kinds of game before the fight. And he certainly looked physically prepared, but come fight night, he just kind of goes in there and lays an egg. And we've seen a couple of those performances from Cerrone, and maybe he was, in fact, looking past Darren Till. You know, we were talking about he only wants to get this fight in October so that he can turn around and fight again on New Year's Eve. And, you know, maybe his mind was, okay, let's just get this out of the way so that we can get a big fight later this year. And I think that kind of backfired on him. And it turns out now he's suspended for the next 6 months for the knockout. So we probably won't be seeing him in December. So I think Donald Cerrone is maybe just thinking a little bit too far ahead for his own good, and he just was not in this fight.
One of the things that's very fascinating about the fight game itself is the mental capacity that these fighters have to go into a fight, to stand across from another person who is looking to knock your head off, rip your arm off, tear you from limb to limb, and you have to be willing to keep your composure, keep a mental focus to where you understand it, and you're going to go out there and say, hey, this is sport, it's entertainment, whether we got animosity or not, that's another story, but at the end of the day, we're in here to see who the better man is, who the better person is, who the better fighter is. And we've seen there are fighters who are able to come to that occasion, and no matter what the circumstances are, they're laser focused. I think of someone like George St. Pierre, who obviously has a big fight coming up next week. I think of Randy Couture during his whole career. I think of Matt Hughes. fighters who, no matter who they was fighting, win, lose, or draw, they were always razor-sharp focused and always came to fight, never looked like they were out of their element, even though they may have suffered a loss in a fight. They always looked like they were prepared. I know GSP had his one mess up against Matt Serra, but Donald Cerrone, you know, we saw it with Rafael Dos Anjos. We've seen it here. And, you know, the hardest part is when it's a quick finish, because you never really know. You know, when Benson Henderson lost the lightweight championship to Anthony Pettis, was it that Benson Henderson wasn't fully prepared, or did Pettis just catch him in a great move that Henderson wasn't didn't react quick enough to defend? It's very hard to tell, but in watching this particular fight, I just kind of felt like Cerrone wasn't the Cowboy that we're used to seeing. He didn't seem relaxed. He didn't seem like you know, he was coming out there to push the action. It, almost to what you said earlier, Leo, almost felt like when he got in the cage and saw just the size difference, he kind of said, okay, plan A is out the window. I got to go to plan B, maybe even C. This dude is going to walk through everything that I have. And then, you know, Mike Tyson said it best for all of the quotes Mike Tyson has given us over the years. One of the best he's ever said is, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. And whenever you take on somebody with knockout power like Darren Till, when you get hit by them, it dramatically changes your approach to the fight the rest of the way through. But credit to Darren Till for finishing the fight the way they did, for keeping his composure. And like you said, afterwards, gave a pretty good speech in the post-fight interview, kind of saying, hey, I may not be, you know, Conor McGregor-esque, but you give me the microphone, I am going to let you guys know I'm here to kick some ass and I'm here to go forward. Now that he's ranked number 8 in the welterweight division, where do you think he goes next? He did, I believe, tweet out a picture and says, how would you guys like to see my offense versus Stephen Thompson's offense in the future? We know Stephen Thompson's got a fight against Jorge Masvidal coming up. Do you think maybe Thompson, Masvidal, the number 2 and 4th ranked welterweight, you think maybe the winner of that gets Darren Till next? Or is that too big of a jump in? Maybe he should fight somebody like a Colby Covington, who's got a fight coming up this weekend, or the winner of Neil Magny and Carlos Condit, somebody like that. What would you do with Darren Till now?
Well, we certainly saw, you know, him cut an excellent promo against Mike Perry. You know, Mike Perry got in his face just outside the cage in the octagon. And, you know, these guys were going back and forth, and I think a lot of people got excited about the prospect of that fight. And we know Mike Perry has a fight coming up fairly soon against Santiago Ponzinibbio. But, man, who wouldn't want to see the winner of that fight face against Darren Till? I think that would be a much more manageable matchup for a guy who's just now entering the top 15, let alone the top 10. So I would like to see, you know, the UFC just kind of give Darren Till these matchups where he's going to be answering questions, because at this point, you know, we've seen, you know, his one highlight against Donald Cerrone is, you know, he got a quick first round TKO. But I think we need to see that, you know, a guy like Darren Till answer the questions of, you know, can he handle the wrestling? Can he handle the jiu-jitsu? Can he handle, you know, being put up against the cage? You know, can he handle, you know, going 3, 4, or 5 rounds? You know, I think these are questions that a young fighter that's still coming up needs to answer. And it would be, I think, a promotional mistake for them to, you know, match him up against a guy like Stephen Wonderboy Thompson or Jorge Masvidal. And, you know, maybe they make him look like a walk in the park. And then that now you lose the momentum that you've gained with Darren Till. So I think smart matchups would be, you know, certainly match him up against guys in the top 15 or maybe against the Mike Perry and, you know, work his way up. You know, let him answer the questions of, you know, whatever holes he may or may not have in his game slowly, and then he can climb his way up to the top 2 or 3 guys in the division and en route to a potential title shot.
I do like where you're coming from with that, and I do agree with you. I'm not a big fan of always throwing the young wolves into the lion's den to see if they're going to sink or swim. I think sometimes you could derail a potential star in the makings run too early. I felt that they did that with Sage Northcutt, even though the fighters he took, you know, seemed, but they really should have gave him some tomato cans to deal with early in his career, so he could be built up as opposed to letting him suffer 2 early losses in his UFC run. I think Stephen Thompson and Jorge Masvidal, I think that might be too big of a jump for him. I did like the Mike Perry interaction that they had. I do feel that those two will put on a very exciting matchup. Mike Perry's a fighter that has certainly shown that, hey, as long as I'm healthy, I'm willing to come out here and fight whoever the case may be. And you guys know, whether it's on the microphone or it's in the cage, I'm going to give you guys something to enjoy. So the UFC gives me a chance. If my body allows me to, I'm going to try to make a good run in this division. So it would be interesting if those two met up. But I also got to say, you just never know what you got until you don't know what you don't got. I know that sounds kind of crazy. That's kind of like a saying that the theater teacher from 21 Jump Street said. But, you know, look at John Jones, 23 years old, kind of ran through everybody and made everything look easy, but gets thrown in there on 6 week notice against Shogun, runs through him with ease. You just never know what you got with a young upstart fighter. Someone like Ryan Bader, who was running through guys, looked easy, ran into some guy by the name of John Jones, got taken out, never really got back on track. You never really know what you have in a fighter and how they're performing on the big stage until they're there. Now, whether you want to take that chance now, I don't think it'll be good business-wise just because you don't got Ronda Rousey, you don't got Brock Lesnar, you know Conor's in and out. You don't really have those big stars. So for fighters who are showing the potential of being a future star in your sport, I definitely think you want to look after them a little bit more, maybe give them one or two fights where it's more winnable or at least not so damaging to where if they lose, it's like, yeah, you're not ready for this stage yet. So I would like to see how it goes from there. And as you pointed out, How does Till do against fighters who aren't going to stand up with him? Even though Cerrone is very good on the ground, he is a stand-up fighter by trade. How would he do against a wrestler like Tyrone Woodley? How would he do against a jiu-jitsu ace like a Damian Maia? These are questions that remain to be seen. Hopefully one day we'll get the answer to those. Now, on the flip side, Donald Cerrone moved up to 170, has looked very, very good since being at welterweight. Had some drawback in his past couple fights, losing to Robbie Lawler, losing to Darren Till by first round knockout. I mean, this is a fighter who has a very good fan following, very active, tough as nails, you know, so, you know, he is bankable. What do you do next, Donald Cerrone, in this division? Where does it go here if you're Sean Shelby and you're trying to make future matchups?
Well, I think last week we were talking about, you know, Donald Cerrone taking on this young lion. You know, he's going to go through him and then, you know, maybe take a fight in December, possibly in the top 10. And, you know, that's going to repave his way to a potential title shot at 170. After seeing him this past weekend, I think, you know, I'm starting to realize that Donald Cerrone is probably the type of fighter that we're only going to be seeing in fun fights moving forward. I don't think he's anywhere close to a title shot at either one of his divisions. You know, I'm glad he's at welterweight at this point in his career. You know, I think he looks great at 170, not cutting too much weight. But I think at this point we're ready to see Donald Cerrone just kind of being in fun fights that are going to get people excited. You know, possibly put him in, you know, that third slot down in a pay per view card or something like that. It's still going to be that name recognition that people are going to be excited to tune in for a Donald Cerrone fight. But I don't think at this point he's really going to be in there competing against the top 10 guys, you know, vying for a title shot. I think we're going to be seeing him in fun fights. You know, maybe once in a while we'll see him against the top 15 guy, but at this point I'd like to see him just kind of, you know, pick his battles a little bit smarter and see, you know, how far he can take his career. You know, hopefully, you know, there's some longevity in there for him, but I think the days of Donald Cerrone as a contender are probably over at this point, which is heartbreaking for me to say.
It is heartbreaking, and what's even more heartbreaking is that 2017 has not been kind to Cowboy Cerrone. He lost at the beginning of the year in Denver, Colorado, to Jorge Masvidal, lost to Robbie Lawler in a fight many people were excited to see, and it really didn't disappoint, and then losing via first round here to Darren Till. He's 34 years old, but he has been in a number of wars, and, you know, you just got to wonder, because he wants to be so active, two things. One, is he allowing his body not only to regenerate, but is he allowing himself to grow as a fighter? I know at 34 years old, as many fights as you're in, how much are you really going to grow in the sport? I get it, but how much time in between fight camps are you allowing your body, your brain, and just your overall mental and physical health to kind of break down, reset the battery charges, and kind of get back to, okay, now let's get in this rhythm? Because just like in any other sport, Leo, and I believe you know this as well, you could get in a rut in fighting, not necessarily because you lost the step and you don't got the juice anymore, just because mentally you're in a block, just like a three-point shooter. You can't find the rim. A home run hitter, you can't seem to hit the ball. A quarterback, you can't seem to find the target. You kind of need those layups. You kind of need those base hits. You kind of need that ball to the flat to kind of get that rhythm going, to kind of get you, okay, now I'm starting to loosen up, okay, I'm starting to feel it. And with Cerrone, you know, because he's been taking on some of the toughest competitors in the division, I just wonder if now, because he's on his losing streak, has he allowed himself to kind of recharge the batteries? Now, because of this loss, I don't know if maybe he'll be put in on medical suspension because it was a first-round knockout. I don't know if he'll be on suspension where he can't fight for the end of the year, but if he's not, I got to imagine he's going to try to press Dana White for a December fight card against somebody to try to get a win for the year. I don't think Cowboy wants to go 0-3. I would look at somebody maybe like a Gunnar Nelson, Dong Young Kim, you know, somebody like that, if they're available, obviously. Somebody, you know, who's still kind of there, but, you know, lower than Cerrone, to get him a matchup. I wouldn't mind seeing him if he could have took on Neil Magny, but he's got a matchup coming up later on this year, so that's out the question. I wouldn't even mind seeing him just take the rest of the year off, kind of letting the battery recharge, come back in January or February, and like you said, fun fights wouldn't be a bad deal, because me and you have talked about this before, Leo. There are some fighters who just won't be an elite fighter, who just won't be a champion. And there's nothing wrong with that, because if you can still fight a high level, you know, you could be there to take on some very good fighters going forward. So I like the idea of Cerrone. If he can't get back up to contending for a welterweight championship, and if they don't throw in a 65-pound division that he could cut to and try to go after that title, I see nothing wrong with just putting him in fun matchups going forward to see how he does there. But, man, it's been a tough year for Donald Cerrone. Hopefully he can bounce back. He is a fan favorite and somebody who has nothing but mutual respect from everybody in the fight game overall.
Yeah, just to be clear, he did get suspended for 180 days following that knockout. You know, there's always things that can, you know, you can go around those things. You know, a medical clearance can get Donald Cerrone in the octagon earlier. But I certainly agree with you that I would like to see Donald Cerrone take, you know, some extended time off, because this is a guy that fights every 3 or 4 months, and, you know, that's just camp after camp after camp, and, you know, you don't really know what's going on in these camps, and, you know, you had the weight cuts in between them. I don't know if he's cutting any weight at this point at 170, but this is, like you said, these are things that are just taking a toll on his body, and he's just not taking enough time off. And I think we saw, you know, a refreshed Robbie Lawler, you know, after suffering that knockout against Tyron Woodley, he was out for a little over a year, and he came back against Donald Cerrone, and he looked like a better, fresher fighter. So I do agree that I think we would like to see Donald Cerrone just take a little bit of time off, you know, forget this fighting every 3 month thing, because, you know, like you said, he's 34 years old, you know, he's no spring chicken at this point. So I think he needs to be a little bit smarter about his career and moving forward, and just kind of, you know, take it a little bit easier, fight maybe 2 or 3 times a year at most, and let your body get a little bit better recovery in between.
Leo, I like what you brought up there, and I just want to touch on it very quickly. When I used to talk with Dominic Robinson, a.k.a. the Fallen Angel, shout out to him. We got to get him back on the show at some point in the future. But when I used to talk to him, he used to say, outside of an injury, the worst thing for a fighter to do is to try to jump back in the cage quickly after a knockout, because your brain hasn't fully recovered. Even though you may feel fine and you may feel like you're all there, you know, physically your brain just, you know, it's a very sensitive muscle. It just hasn't fully recovered. And like you pointed out with Robbie Lawler, suffers that knockout against Tyron Woodley, sits out for almost a little over a year. Now, granted, he was a champion for a few fights, so he earned some good money to take that time off. But then he comes back, he looks refreshed, he looks like he hasn't really missed a step for the most part. So for Cowboy, even though he hasn't been in the big fights like Lawler has as far as championship bouts, I think he's been in enough to where, yeah, take some time off, let your body and let your brain heal from this knockout. Don't try to rush it back. You already don't spar in practice, so kudos to you for that. But take some time to really allow yourself to fully recover, because the last thing you want to do as a fighter, I believe, is step in the cage. Physically, you feel fine. but mentally you're just not there. And it's not because, you know, you lost a step or you don't have it anymore, but you haven't allowed your brain to fully recover itself to where now your reaction time isn't the same. The way that you go in there and you focus, you're a little bit off, you know, you're hesitant a little bit more. And in a sport like MMA where things could change with a punch, takedown, or an arm grab, you certainly want to be at full width, mind, body, and spirit. So for Cerrone, I certainly would like it if he did take the full medical leave and not come back for a while, kind of let everything rejuvenate with himself. And hopefully when we see him back in the cage, we'll see the cowboy we've all grown to love, who's exciting, brings a good fight, and has a big smile on his face after a victory. We'll see how that goes. Speaking of a big smile on their face, Leo, hometown hero herself, Karolina Kowalskiewicz, got a victory herself. She got back in the win column with a unanimous decision victory over Jody Escobel. What do you make of Karolina getting this win? You know, this is a woman who really showed people when she fought Joanna Jędrzejczyk last year at Madison Square Garden that, yeah, she didn't come out victorious, but this is a tough, tough cookie. But then suffers a loss to Claudia Gadelha. People are like, wait, is she a one-hit wonder or what's going on? She's at home. The pressure was there. But she comes out with a victory here, emotional at the end. Things starting to look on the uptick for her. What did you make of Karolina getting a hometown victory?
Absolutely incredible. I love the way that, you know, from the first bell of the fight, she was, you know, very aggressive, just walking down Jody Escobel. You know, to be fair, you know, Jody Escobel coming from Invicta, making her UFC debut, kind of a journeyman fighter at this point. But Karolina Kowalkiewicz looked like she was, you know, a woman on a mission. Just a fighter that's, you know, not really taking any prisoners on her way back to title contention. So I really love the way that she looked. Like I said, she was very aggressive from the beginning. She was letting her hands go. Her jab looked just very, very sharp and very snappy. And, you know, after the fight, she's doing all the right things. She's creating storylines. She's calling people out. She knows exactly how the division is stacking up, and she's calling out the right opponent. So I loved everything out of Karolina Kowalkiewicz this past weekend. And we talked about it a little bit last weekend, was, you know, was there going to be any pressure on Karolina Kowalkiewicz, you know, fighting in her hometown, and just, you know, that pressure of having, you know, an arena full of people behind you, and, you know, just having to perform. And like we both suspected last week, this was actually something that helped her. You know, she was very emotional going into the arena. The fans were really into it, and I think she was the biggest star of the night that night. So I think everything just kind of aligned for Karolina to have a good night, and sure enough, she did. I wish I could have seen her get the finish, you know, not for lack of trying. I think she looked absolutely fantastic, but I think everything kind of just played the way it should have played for Kowalkiewicz to you know, keep her rank as a top contender at 115.
No, excuse me. Nah, certainly. It would have been nice, just, you know, just for the idea that, you know, as highly ranked as you are in division and you are taking on a newcomer, you know, you certainly want to show your dominance there and give the home crowd something to watch. But like you said, it wasn't for lack of trying. Sometimes as fans, we kind of get on fighters. I'm talking about you here, Leo, with George St. Pierre, for not finishing fights. And it's like, well, come on, man. There's plenty of examples of where they're trying to finish, but it ain't my damn fault Dan Hardy wanted me to rip his damn arm off, okay? This ain't Transformers where he could put it back on, okay? But it would have been nice, but still in all, she put on a great performance that we did talk about last week. Sometimes fighters go fight in front of their home crowds. The pressure is just too much. We saw with Donald Cerrone earlier this year against Jorge Masvidal. Nothing against Jorge Masvidal. He's a great fighter and put on a great performance. But you also got to wonder how much pressure was on Cerrone fighting from his whole crowd, fans there. So sometimes there is that pressure on a fighter to where they don't come out and necessarily put on their best performances. But Karolina blocked all that out. She soaked in the fan love, and she went out there and put on a great performance. Now I'm hearing from a lot of people on social media, they want to see Karolina Kowalskiewicz taking on Jessica Andrade next. They both lost to the champion, Joanna Jędrzejczyk. No shame there. But Andrade just defeated Gadelha. Karolina lost to Gadelha. So seeing these two fight, maybe as a possible number contenders bout after Joanna defends the title next week. What do you make of Karolina and Jessica Andrade? Is that a matchup you think should be made right now? Or, given that they both recently lost to a champion, maybe they should fight someone else before they fight each other. That way it gives just a little bit more time in between title fights. What do you make of it?
No, this is exactly what I was referring to. I love the way Carolina called out Jessica Andrade. She knows exactly where she is in the division, and she knows exactly what she needs to do to, you know, climb her way back up to you know, a potential match, a rematch, rather, with Joanna Jędrzejczyk. So I think this is the perfect matchup. You know, this is the top two women in the division, not named Joanna Jędrzejczyk. So I think this is an absolute perfect number one contenders fight. You know, maybe it's a little bit too early for either fighter to, you know, make that kind of turnaround. But I mean, these are basically the top two or three women in the division at 115, and we've seen Joanna Jędrzejczyk just be so dominant that it's only a matter of time before she has to start, you know, recycling these opponents. And what better than Jessica Andrade and Karolina Kowalkiewicz, especially if Kowalkiewicz turns out to be, you know, the winner in that fight. You know, you can't go wrong with a rematch between, you know, the two Polish fighters in the UFC. So I'd love to see Jessica Andrade and Karolina Kowalkiewicz. I think, you know, we've seen what Andrade is really capable of, and she's really a menacing, you know, just a huge kind of fighter that likes to use her size advantage and her wrestling. So I'd probably favor Andrade, but it certainly makes for an interesting matchup on paper.
No, it would certainly make for a very good matchup between the two. It's kind of like the old UFC matchups, the grappler versus the striker. Andrade, very, you know, like you said, very much wants to use her wrestling and her strength to get Carolina off of her feet, where Carolina does have the stand-up ability from a technical standpoint, even though Andrade, you know, hits harder. It would be a very good matchup. I would certainly love to see it. Both women are terrific fighters, good personalities. Carolina is getting better at speaking English, you know, where she feels more comfortable with it. Andrade, you know, not necessarily, but, you know, she's a young fighter still coming up. So maybe in time she'll get better at it. I think it'd be a very good matchup. Now, if they fought each other, the winner of that, let's just say they get scheduled sometime in early 2018. Whoever wins that, they could be, you know, if it's Carolina, she'll be just over a year and a half removed from losing to the champion. It was a close bout, so okay, maybe it's time for the rematch. Claudia, if she wins, she'll be under a year losing to Joanna. It wasn't a close match, even though she gutted it out. She gutted out the five round and showed her toughness. You know, outside of Carolina winning, I just don't know if Claudia has made enough. I don't know if she's made enough improvements in her game to challenge, to be a legit threat to the champion going forward. Obviously, we'll see. But I would certainly love to see these two go at it in the future of the UFC. It'll be a good fight in the women's strawweight division. Now,
I mean, there's always, not to cut you off, but there's always that you know, matchup between Tisha Torres and Michelle Waterson that was announced recently. I believe they're fighting at the end of the year. Yeah, I mean, there's a possibility that one of those could, you know, potentially look good enough to earn a title shot. I think, you know, we've talked about it before, when Michelle Waterson was looking good enough at some point until she ran into Rose Namajunas. So, you know, there's a potential for Michelle Waterson to possibly contend, you know, in the near future. And then, you know, there's Cynthia Calvillo, which, in my opinion, she's one of the most exciting jiu-jitsu or grapplers in the UFC at this point, but she's just a little bit too young in her career to be putting her up against Joanna Jędrzejczyk. So there are other options, but not necessarily the best options for Joanna Jędrzejczyk. So, like I said, Carolina and Jessica Andrade are probably the next one in mind. You know, the winner of that potential matchup is perhaps the only one that could really make a case for themselves as a new contender.
No, and that is true. You do make some great points there. Maybe, just maybe, depending on how things go next week with Joanna and Rose Namajunas, because, again, let's not take anything away from Thug Rose. She may pull off the upset here. But maybe, just maybe, maybe they do. Claudia Gadelha, Carolina Kowalkiewicz. The winner of that takes on the winner of Michelle Waterson.
Jessica Andrade, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
did
Claudia
I say
just lost to Jessica.
Oh, okay, yeah. My bad. I got the names mixed up. I do apologize. But you get Jessica Andrade, Karolina Kowalkiewicz. Maybe the winner of that takes on the winner of Tisha Torres, Michelle Waterson, to really give, again, both fighters a little bit of time in between their last title defenses. You don't want those to go too quickly. But then also, it kind of builds to one of them being now a legit threat. They got momentum. They got a fight. They got a win streak going in. Both fighters then would have, if it's a winner of Karolina or Jessica, if they go on to win that fight, and then the Torres-Waterson fight, they'll be on a 3-fight winning streak. So it could be something to maybe build towards, okay, they lost to the champion already, but now look what they've done since. They're even more of a threat now. So, maybe that's a little bit of daydreaming right there, but we'll see how it all plays out for the women's strawweight division as it goes forward. Seeing how it plays out, Leo, we saw one of the greatest submissions that we've ever seen inside the cage. We watch a lot of MMA, and honestly, this is something you don't see. I would say the only thing close to was Matt Hughes, Frank Trigg, and I'm talking about the light heavyweight showdown between Jan Blachowicz.
Yep.
I believe that's how you say his name. Please forgive me, guys, for butchering it. But he pulled off a rear naked choke submission on Devin Clark standing up. Now, Matt Hughes at least jumped on the back of Frank Trigg. This was standing up. And before we get to it, Leo, won't you welcome in our guest that's on the show with us today?
Oh, hey, welcome, David Stepanian. Good to hear from you, brother. It's been a couple of weeks since we heard from you, so come on in on the show and just have some fun with us talking about some fights, brother. Yeah. Talking about the light heavyweight fight between Jan Blachowicz and Devin Clark this past weekend. So did you see the fight this past weekend? And let us know your overall thoughts.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show again. I saw a few fights over the weekend. I watched the Bellator card, and I watched the Cerrone and Till fight. Wow, what a fight that was, by the way. But I didn't get a chance to watch that fight. No, I tried to watch as much MMA as I could this past weekend, but there was just so much action, I couldn't get to everything.
Well, we certainly can't blame you for that, brother. It's football season, so we know what you're up to. But
football, basketball, hockey, college.
Of course, but again, this is a sports show. This is a sports show, so we're only going to talk about real sports. Anyway, guys,
okay.
We're talking about Jan Blachowicz against Devin Clark. I mean, to me, it was just it tells me a lot about Blachowicz's just his squeeze in his forearms, because I mean, to be able to choke out a guy with not even controlling his hips, not controlling his legs, not no hooks, nothing like that. And Devin Clark did not hesitate to tap right away. It was absolutely incredible on the part of Jan Blachowicz. A little bit disappointing on the part of Devin Clark. I mean, at this point in his career, he didn't really do much. I think he just kind of let his freaking out kind of get the better of him. And, he didn't really do any hand fighting. He didn't try to, sidestep his hips a little bit. There was a way out of that choke. But, I mean, when you have a 205-pound gorilla squeezing the heck out of you, it's probably forgivable to just freak out and tap right away. And that's, the fastest way out. So, certainly impressive by Jan Blachowicz, but, Devin Clark should have missed out to that, brother.
David, what did obviously, maybe if you didn't watch the fight, I'm assuming you may have saw the highlights at least. This is one of the best submissions we've ever seen pull off, just because it's a standing rear naked choke. I mean, this is literally the bad guy in an action flick that comes up behind the hero, grabs him, the hero's struggling, then he kicks off the wall, he grabs a bottle, busts over his head, bites his arm, turns around, 7-8 punch combo, flips, and all that other fun stuff. That didn't happen here. What did you make of this type of submission being pulled off? I mean, hot damn! This is going to be on the highlight reel for years to come.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I know he got that second round submission, and it earned him the performance of the night bonus. I mean, I think personally, if it wasn't for Darren Till pulling off the upset against Donald Cerrone, which also earned him a performance of the night bonus, I think if it wasn't for that fight, I think everyone would be talking about Jan Blachowicz. I think this would be what people are talking about is this submission, but it just happened at like at a time where, I mean, I know Darren Till is such a talented fighter, but I just feel like that upset over Donald Cerrone was really what grabbed that, what stole the show, really. That's what really grabbed everyone's attention. But other, if it wasn't for that, I think everyone would be talking about that sick submission.
Well, David, we talked about it earlier before you got on here, so why don't you take a few moments and talk to us about that main event between Darren Till and Cerrone, as far as what did you make of the overall performance? Sure, it was only one round, so it's kind of hard to take a lot from it, but you know, we talked about maybe Cerrone not getting over the mental hurdle of being in main event matches. Darren Till certainly stepping up, and maybe where do you see both fighters going from here as far as future matchups?
Oh, I mean, I feel like this is a pretty significant loss for Donald Cerrone. I mean, really, I don't know where do you go from here? That's three losses in a row, and especially Donald Cerrone looked so good at welterweight before this three-fight losing streak. He looked so good, and I mean, Darren Till, undefeated, 16-0 with one draw. I mean, really, this is so huge for Darren Till. I mean, this was probably a huge leap in competition for him, you know, from fighting, I can't even, what was the other guy's name? Velkovich or whatever, you know, his last fight just last month. And now you come back 6 weeks later and fight Donald Cerrone and you pull off a pretty big upset in my eyes. I didn't want to completely write off Darren Till, but I was surprised. I thought Donald Cerrone bounces back from that losing streak, but yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of questions Donald Cerrone has to answer for himself, but Darren Till is in a very good spot right now. He just picked up the biggest win of his career and he's undefeated. So it was huge for both fighters, but in different ways. It was a huge loss for Cerrone, but a huge win for Darren Till.
Well, I don't know if we lost Kalani here, but yeah, I mean, I'm certainly in agreement. I think Darren Till is probably starting to making at this point. And like we talked about earlier, I think the UFC wants to tread a little bit carefully and give Darren Till not necessarily favorable matchups, but make his road to the top of the division, you know, a steady growth, you know. And we want to see a young prospect like this just kind of answer the questions that he hasn't answered yet. And you don't want to really throw him in there against the Wolves. So really excited.
I love what Brendan Schaub said. Did you see Brendan Schaub on Joe Rogan a few days ago where they said something like the Cowboy and Till fight had 40,000 viewers, right? It was something like 40,000 viewers. And Brendan Schaub said something like if a video of me pissing on YouTube would get more than 40,000 viewers. So what do you think, Leo? I mean, is 40,000 good? I mean, I don't know what the fight pass. No,
right. 40,000 sounds absolutely pitiful. I think they, you know, Brendan Schaub says, you could probably get a lot more views on YouTube, and you know, you monetize a video like that, you can certainly get probably a lot more money than you would on Fight Pass. And I think it just speaks to the fact that we're having an absolute down year in MMA, and there, you know, the interest is kind of waning. I did want to, you know, bring this up at the end of the show, but you know, there's been some marketing going on, or some market research going on for the George St. Pierre fight coming up in next week. And some of the surveys are kind of surprising. You know, a lot of fans are brand new to the MMA game. You know, they came in the Ronda Rousey days and the Conor McGregor days. And you know, these are the pay-per-view buying fans, and they don't really know much about GSP. And you know, we've heard Joe Rogan talking about this UFC 217. You know, it's struggling to sell tickets, and I think it all just speaks to the fact that, like I said, MMA is having a very, very down year. And it's a star-driven sport, and you know, without very many stars, it's kind of hard to get you know, viewer interest. So, you know, 40,000 sounds kind of pitiful, especially for, you know, a guy like Darren Till, you know, who just made a big statement.
Yeah,
you know,
good
only
40, fight.
For only 40,000 to see that, it's kind of sad, but that's just the nature of the UFC business in 2017.
It certainly doesn't help that Darren Till had a great performance, but it was only in front of 40,000 fans who had access to Fight Pass. I mean, really, this was probably, you could say this was Darren Till's, you know, what a great performance, what a great win. But to have only 40,000 people have seen it, and, you know, the Bellator card, the Gegard Mousasi and Alexander Shlemenko, a lot of people, that was on cable. So a lot more people, several hundreds of thousands of more people watched Gegard Mousasi versus Alexander Shlemenko as opposed to Cowboy Cerrone versus Darren Till. So it really, I felt like it really didn't help Darren Till's cause that this was a big win that nobody really saw, you know? I'd be a little frustrated if I was Darren Till, you know, with those numbers, you know, because he could have just as easily been on a cable card. You know, he could have been on this Saturday's Fox Sports 1 card, which I'm sure tons of fans will watch. Lyoto Machida and Derek Brunson. Great card for cable. You know, he could have been on the pay-per-view in 2 weeks. But no, you know, it had to be a Fight Pass, and Cowboy Cerrone didn't even know who Darren Till was until recently.
Right. Well, there's certainly something to be said about, you know, how the UFC markets, you know, these young fighters. And, you know, certainly it makes sense for a European fighter to be fighting in a European card. You know, it's unfortunate that they were stuck on the Fight Pass, you know, portion of UFC programming. But, you know, with a win over Donald Cerrone, this only means the best for a guy like Darren Till. So I think, you know, maybe he took one in the gut this past weekend, but, you know, with the promo that he cut against Mike Perry and, you know, just his persona, I think there's certainly a lot for the UFC to work with and try to put this guy on, you know, on more prominent cards and, you know, possibly in top contender fights down the future. So, you know, it's not all lost for Darren Till. I mean, there's still a highlight reel knockout of him just kind of floating out there. So I think this could be a star in the making if the UFC knows how to promote him properly.
Can you guys hear me now?
Especially.
Yeah, we can hear you, Colin.
You guys can hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, what happened there?
No idea. I was sitting here, and one of my dogs ran past me. I guess he must have hit my wire when I plugged it back in. I don't know what happened, but I'm sitting here trying to talk, and I'm like, why aren't they hearing me? I thought you guys would just shut me out. I was going to say, guys, come on. So I don't know. I don't know from technical difficulties, but I'm back now. So yeah.
I think at this point, you know, moving on to the Bellator card, this is a card that I really want to talk about, especially the Gegard Mousasi fight. You know, David, you said you saw the fight itself. I thought you know, Gegard Mousasi looked fantastic in the first round. Unfortunately, you know, the first punch that he takes to the face, his eye swells absolutely shut. So he was fighting basically with one eye for 2.5 rounds of the fight. But from what I saw in the first round and, you know, even, you know, in parts of the second round, I thought Gegard Mousasi, especially his wrestling, looked pretty damn good, you know. And what can you really do when you're fighting with one eye? And I kind of want to give Gegard Mousasi a pass, but what do you guys think about his debut at Bellator?
Well, I want to chime in here. I love seeing Gegard Mousasi fight, and I especially love this fight because I'm Armenian. I don't know if you guys know this. I'm Armenian. Gegard Mousasi is Armenian, and Alexander Shlemenko is Russian. So anyone who's like Russian or Armenian from the Soviet countries, this is a fight that really struck close to home. And this was a fight that even my family was interested in because it was an Armenian versus a Russian. I mean, there's no rivalry there, but these are two countries that are just so close together. So, you know, my family doesn't even care about MMA. They wanted to watch this fight because it was an Armenian versus a Russian. And, of course, we're rooting for the Armenian Gegard Mousasi. And I feel like Gegard Mousasi is one of the best middleweights out there. But I think first round, fantastic. And honestly, I give him a lot of credit for being able to do as much as he did in the second round with his eyes shut. I mean, I thought he did enough to win a close second round. I thought the second round was a little close, but I gave the second round to Mousasi, but that third round was all Shlemenko. I thought it was the most dominant round of the fight from either fighter. I thought Shlemenko just completely controlled the third round, completely from start to finish. But I felt Gegard had a great first round, and I thought he did enough close second round. So I thought Gegard won the fight. I mean, I scored a 29-28 as well, just like all three judges. And I know Shlemenko said he's going to file a complaint or something about the decision, but there's no way for him to file a complaint in Connecticut, by my understanding. So I agree with the decision. And I mean, I can see if you're Shlemenko, I can see how you're a little frustrated there, especially when, you know, Gegard Mousasi beat you with one eye shut, basically, you know, and it doesn't feel good because you had such a big advantage there. It was the biggest fight of your career, arguably. I could understand Shlemenko's frustrations a little bit, but I agree with how the judges went. You're not going to please everybody. So people are going to disagree with the decision all the time. That's why don't let it go to the judges' scorecards. Don't let it go to the judges. I hate to sound cliche here, but I thought they did a great job. I thought the judges did a great job, and I thought both fighters came out and put on a hell of a performance. I was very entertained by the fight, so I was happy.
And watching this fight, it reminded me of when George St. Pierre took on Jake Shields. Jake Shields gets a borderline finger poke, eye scratch on George St. Pierre early, and it really causes George to not look like the GSP we've come to know to be so dominant, and he took a little bit more punishment in that fight that up until that point we were used to. And I felt the same way here with Mousasi. We've seen him fighting all the major promotions look just like a world beater more often than not, but suffering that punch early. And credit to Shlemenko. I mean, this is a tough cookie. Now, we talked about it on the show last week. This wasn't going to be no easy debut for Gegard, but suffering that eye injury early, going out there with one eye, it certainly makes your fight plan and your execution that much tougher to go forward. And taking on somebody like Alexander Shlemenko, doesn't make it any easier. So kudos to Gegard for muscling this victory out. It didn't look overly impressive, so obviously the criticism of, another UFC fighter comes to Bellator and struggles in their debut, but I think in this one you kind of got to give him a pass considering the injury that he suffered early on. Obviously, he wasn't pleased with his performance, but I thought it was a very good match. I wouldn't mind seeing a rematch somewhere down the road, and for these fighters who always want to try to file a grievance with the judges going forward, look, they never get turned over. It's not unless you can prove, that they use Vaseline, they rub Vaseline on their body, or they got caught for a PED substance. There, no commission and nobody else is going to overturn the decision. So take your lungs like a man, and as David said, don't allow the fight to go to the judges overall. If you don't want the controversy and the possibility of losing, go in there looking to get the finish early on and more often so that hopefully it doesn't go to the judges. And if it does, it's within your favor. But this is a good matchup. I don't know necessarily where Mousasi would go from here. I know he's got to get that eye healthy, depending on his recovery, who's next for him. But somewhere down the road, I wouldn't even mind seeing these guys step in there again. It was that competitive. I want to see, will it be that the second time, or will one of these guys separate themselves a little bit more just to show the first fight was merely a fluke?
Yeah, I think Bellator is really putting their marbles on a guy like Gegard Mousasi. He's one of the most marketable guys that they have at this point. Certainly, like David said, he's probably one of, if not the best, 185-pounders on the planet. And, it didn't really look like it this past weekend, but, like we said, a lot of it maybe has to do with the eye swelling shut. I do have a complaint about him is that I think it was in the third round, there was a weird scramble where he basically gave up his back, just completely gave up his back. And if Shlemenko were a bit of a more competent grappler, he could have easily taken him back and gone for the choke, because I think at that point, Gegard Mousasi was just giving it up. So that was a little bit of a weird instance right there. And then Shlemenko in the third round, he does a beautiful takedown, a judo-style takedown. But he was just happy enough to ground and pound or just stay in Mousasi's guard. I mean, at this point, you don't really know if you won the second round. And, obviously, by the judges' scorecards, he didn't. So why not just stand up and try to pick apart Gegard Mousasi on the feet? Because, as David said, that was the most dominant round of the fight. And Shlemenko was just picking apart Gegard Mousasi. Mousasi just couldn't see any of the spinning back fists coming, none of the knees, none of the leg kicks. So he was just a sitting duck. So why would Shlemenko be happy to just stay on the ground with Mousasi, where obviously Mousasi has the advantage? So I'm in agreement with David in the way that he scored the fight. I think certainly Mousasi won the first round. The second round was close. I gave it to Musasi. Would not be upset if anybody gave it to Shlemenko. And then certainly the third round for Shlemenko. But there is no room really to be complaining and you know, trying to appeal a decision, because it wasn't really a robbery. It was just a, you know, a close second round, and that's really what it came down to. So I'm in agreement with the decision. And I think at this point, Bellator ought to start thinking about Musasi in title contention, because you want to strike while the iron's hot, and you really don't want to see Musasi, you know, kind of lay another egg and you start losing, you know, the guy's momentum. So, you know, put him in there in a title shot as soon as possible.
Yeah, and I want to add, because Kalani was saying, I've read a lot that Musasi is next in line for a title shot. There's a December 9th, Rafael Cavallo is going to fight Alessio Sakharov for the middleweight championship. Rafael Cavallo is the middleweight champion in Bellator. So by my understanding, Musasi is going to fight the winner of that fight. So he is next in line for a title shot, you know, coming up soon.
Yeah, that will be interesting to see if it goes with that. Again, because of his eye injury, you know, maybe he's going to be out longer than expected. We'll see, though. Hopefully not. I wanted to ask you guys this before I jump to another fight on the card. Even though he had an eye injury, you know, if facts are facts, this is another former UFC fighter stepped in the Bellator cage and didn't look to be this world beater where all the great fighters are now going to the B League. And hey, you should be going in there hitting home runs because you played in the majors and now you're in the minors with the small guys. Bellator is actually starting to show that, look, we got some stiff competition down here, at least among our top guys in the division. Our mid to top guys in the division are just as compatible with your mid to top guys as well. What do you make of another UFC fighter coming here and not looking like a world beater? Does this speak more to the UFC being smart and letting these fighters go, or Bellator actually isn't getting the respect and credit for quality and level of fighters that they deserve?
Well, I'll jump in on this first. I think we can all admit that, you know, Bellator is no pride. It really isn't like a one-to-one comparison to the UFC or even a Strikeforce. You know, I think Strikeforce didn't really get enough credit while they were around until after the fact, when a lot of these guys came to the UFC and they started becoming contenders and even champions. I don't think Bellator is quite there yet. I think there's a significant drop-off in terms of overall talent. Not to say that, you know, there aren't world-class fighters in Bellator, you know, like a Michael Chandler and, you know, even a Gegard Mousasi, who's coming from the UFC, making a debut in Bellator, but I still think he's a world-class fighter. And, you know, maybe he didn't look, you know, as good as we were hoping him to look against a guy, you know, coming off a long layoff and kind of a journeyman fighter in Alexander Shlemenko, but I mean, there's probably a lot of things going on in the background that we're just not privy of. You know, Gegard Mousasi is now having to look for sponsors to supplement his income. And, you know, he's having to make a debut in a new promotion. You know, these are new things that are going on. So, you know, maybe there are such things as, you know, just butterflies going into a new promotion. So maybe I can give him a pass for something like that. I would like to see him, you know, as I said earlier, I think he is one of, if not the top 185 pounder in the world. So I would like to see him moving forward to really demonstrate that kind of level that we all think he is. So I think moving forward, if he is to contend for a title at Bellator, he really should be running through the rest of the division.
All right. Well, I think there's a very good reason Bellator isn't near the UFC's level like Strikeforce or Pride was, or WEC for the lighter weight classes. And that's because, like, when you look at the WEC, the UFC absorbed the WEC. I mean, Strikeforce got absorbed into the UFC. Pride got absorbed into Strikeforce and the UFC. So it really didn't leave Bellator with anything. So I feel like where Bellator came from, they sort of built themselves from the ground up is where they really started from scratch. And I really have to give them credit for being able to grab all this talent, because the way Bellator, how that worked was, you know, they had to wait out for these contracts to end in the UFC, and they had to convince a lot of these guys who were already in the UFC, they had to convince them, hey, come to Bellator, we have this, we have that. So Bellator was at a serious disadvantage compared to Strikeforce or Pride or the WEC because they didn't have the same tools to be able to have the talent, you know. So Bellator was really at a disadvantage there. But I think, several years later, I think Bellator has done a very good job building themselves from the ground up. They've put the money in it. They've invested. They've gotten a lot of great talent. They've built great talent in their promotion. They do a great, I love the walking. I love the fighter intros. I love their commentary team. Bellator does a lot of things very well for how little they had to work with from the beginning. So I have to give Bellator a lot of credit for being able to, I don't think their talent level, I don't think it's not quite near the UFC yet, but I think it's certainly getting there. And I think, when you have guys like Alexander Shlemenko giving Gegard Mousasi, a one-eyed great Gegard Mousasi, a run for his money, I think that's a good sign of where Bellator is headed. And I think, you know, give it a few more years to develop. There's only more good things to come for Bellator. They're going to make more big pickups, and they're going to have more of these, like, sort of freak show fights, like Chael Sonnen versus Vanderlei, or Ken Shamrock versus Royce Gracie 3 or something like that. You know, like, they're gonna have more of these weird fights, but that's what Bellator was, and like that's how they built themselves. So I think they're doing a great job with their talent, and I can't wait to see where they go next. Where do they go from here, and what's to come from Bellator? You know, I really like how this promotion is handling itself, and I especially like it because it gives fighters another option outside of the UFC, and it's another option that pays fairly well. It doesn't pay just, in a lot of cases, it doesn't pay as much as the UFC, but it's a viable second option, a viable second home for a lot of fighters, and that's what I feel is most important.
Speaking of seeing what the future holds here, one of the most brutal visuals you see in the cage came from Christina Williams giving a head kick to Heather Hardy in the women's flyweight division. It was a third fight from the main event, the fight right before the co-main event. In the second round, it was a TKO stoppage due to a doctor stoppage. Heather Hardy, a professional boxer, 20-0, undefeated. She was 1-0 in MMA, you know, made her Bellator debut earlier. A lot of hype behind her being a boxing champion, and what type of run can she make here? Christina Williams making her Bellator debut, really her professional MMA debut. And oh my gosh, that left head kick to the face. And credit to Heather Hardy. Granted, she comes from the boxing world, so I'm sure she's been hitting the nose a few times. But that broken nose and in the visual of all the blood just running down her face, and she was still willing to fight. But clearly, it was just too much damage there. It was almost like Roy McDonald versus Robbie Lawler. It was just too much damage for her to go forward, so the doctor had to stop it. Bellator, as David was kind of pointing out to there in his last statement, they're making acquisitions, and what I like about Bellator is they're getting fighters from other disciplines, boxing, kickboxing, and et cetera, to come in here and to kind of showcase what they can do. If you guys saw either the fight, David, if you saw the fight, or Leo, maybe if you saw the highlights, I mean, what did you make of this really surprise moment here? Granted, they're both young in their MMA careers, but Hardy was clearly the one that Bellator was trying to build up here as a future star. Williams threw a monkey wrench in those plans and said, What did you guys make of that head kick and that visual of Hardy going forward? Was that good or bad for women's mixed martial arts? I don't know if that's a chauvinistic question or not, but, you know, I just figured I'd ask. Leo, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I mean, it was certainly a visceral sight to see Heather Hardy, you know, just with an absolute wrecked nose and just bleeding all over the cage. And, you know, I was watching the Neiman Gracie fight, I was watching that on replay, and you just saw the mat just absolutely covered in blood, you know, in that area. So it was a little bit hard to watch, and, you know, especially if you're kind of new to combat sports or MMA in general, and you're just flipping through channels and you're watching, you know, just a fighter with you know, so much blood pouring out of her nose. And, you know, the doctor had the stoppage. I think it was a great stoppage. And, you know, as you said, Bellator is certainly trying to, you know, build up a Heather Hardy. And like you said, she's a, an undefeated pro boxer, and you know, I think there's a lot that she has going on for her. You know, she's very easy on the eyes, and she's very charismatic, and I think there's a lot for Bellator to work with her Heather Hardy. But unfortunately, I think we saw a little bit of these problems in her debut in Bellator as well, is that she really doesn't know how to really fight her way out of the clinch. You know, I think she's got a little bit of work to do in the MMA aspects of the game, and certainly I think the kicking aspect of MMA really caught her by surprise this past weekend. Unfortunately, you know, her nose just absolutely shattered, and she wasn't able to go on. But I think we did see a warrior spirit out of her, and she really wasn't willing to quit. And I think she wanted the fight to continue, but I think it was just a little bit too visceral for the doctors to let a fight like that go on. So it's unfortunate for Heather Hardy. And I think she's, you know, certainly going to come back and probably make a career out of herself. But it's certainly a big step back for her in her young developing career.
Yeah, I totally agree. Bellator clearly wanted Heather Hardy to win this fight. She's a 20-0 boxer. She won her debut in Bellator, so they wanted to build her up. But boy, Christina Williams, what a vicious kick! I mean, within seconds, my TV screen is filled up with blood. Like, there's just blood all over my TV screen, and I really thought it was a great stoppage by the doctor. So I was happy with the stoppage. I couldn't believe that they were even thinking about continuing the fight, but they stopped it at the right time. And I think this is great for Christina Williams, because I mean, you got a highlight reel knockout now. And I think this is just in general, a highlight reel for Bellator. I mean, boy, what a kick. I mean, I kept seeing it and thinking, oh my goodness, you know, so this, I feel like it was huge for Bellator. And I think it was overall good. I thought it was overall a good for Bellator to have that sort of in their reel. And I thought that was great for Christina Williams. And I mean, where does Heather Hardy go from here? I think again, you see these same problems in her debut in Bellator, but you know, you go back to the drawing board, what was the, who was a few weeks ago, he fought in Bellator and he lost his debut, Aaron Pico. I mean, yeah, Aaron Pico, you know, you just go back to the drawing board, you work harder, and Heather Hardy, I still feel like she's a very talented fighter, so I think, you know, you just go back to the drawing board and come back, train even harder. I mean, she just got kicked in the head, plain and simple, you know, there's not much you could say about that. So I thought it was a great stoppage, and I thought it was an entertaining fight overall.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this type of stuff happens. You know, it's really not much you can say. I mean, stuff happens. You know, a punch lands a certain way, a kick gets through your guard, or you roll or lean the wrong way, and it lands. It can really be tough. I think Heather Hardy still has a bright future in mixed martial arts, and I think with Christina Williams, I think Bellator might have found somebody who they can say, hey, maybe we could build something off here with her. And again, one thing I like about Bellator is they don't throw their fighters who show promise into the deep waters so early. They want to build them up, obviously for promotional reasons. But if they allow Christina Williams to see how she looks in future matchups, and if she can show she's game and can hang with some of the best in that promotion, hey, that's a win-win for both, not only her and the promotion going forward. So it'll be pretty good right there. Now, we talked about what did happen. Let's talk about what is going to happen as we wrap up the show here. This coming weekend, we are going to be seeing from Sao Paulo, Brazil, UFC Fight Night, and it is the return of the Dragon, Lyoto Machida. Yes, former UFC light heavyweight champ, Lyoto Machida returning. He is fighting at middleweight, obviously. He is returning against Derek Brunson. I'm about to pull up here. It's been a while since Machida stepped in. He was flagged by USADA. Kind of weird because I believe they said, I think it was either his sub, like if I remember correctly, and either one of you could correct me if you remember, I believe he got suspended, but then they said actually they found out that the supplement he was taking, that the brand was tainted, or it was a false negative, something like, I know it was something where if he would have chose a fighter, he probably could have won it and not served a full suspension. Served to say, hey, maybe I just need time to regroup. He did suffer some losses. He is getting up there in age. Hey, you know what? I need to heal my body, get over these injuries, and just try to come back, refocus, regenerate it, kind of like we talked about earlier with Donald Cerrone. And now he's taking on Derek Brunson. And, Leo, what do you make of the Dragon returning, and what do you expect to see from Leota at 39 years old against a very tough and game Derek Brunson?
Yeah, I do seem to recall something along those lines where Leo Machida got the short end of the stick in getting suspended for 2 years for something that really was out of his control. But like you said, he chose not to fight it, so he served out his full two-year suspension. And I'm excited to see him back. As we were talking about earlier, I mean, it might be good. You know, I think his last fight was against Yoel Romero, and he lost by knockout. So as we said earlier, that's probably what fighters need when coming off, you know, a couple of losses like that and you know, just getting their head knocked loose. So I think that this might be good for Leota Machida. I think hopefully he's going to come in here refreshed, you know, probably no concussion symptoms or anything of the sort. So I expect Leota Machida to come back, you know, hopefully refreshed and just ready to go. I don't know necessarily that he's going to be contending for a title, but a fight against Derek Brunson, you know, it's a very fun fight. Brunson, you know, certainly no slouch. So I like the matchmaking with Leota, and we'll see how the Dragon comes back from a long layoff.
Yeah, I think this is a great matchup. I love seeing Derek Brunson fight. I love seeing Leota Machida. And, yeah, he did lose to Yoel Romero and Luke Rockhold in his last two bouts. But I feel like, yeah, we're going to see a refreshed and rejuvenated Leota Machida, but I don't know if that's going to be enough against a guy like Derek Brunson. I mean, Derek Brunson is just, you know, he's a much younger guy. I mean, Leota Machida's 39 years old, and Derek Brunson, you could argue, beat Anderson Silva. That was a controversial decision. I mean, he just knocked out Dan Kelly a few months ago. I think Derek Brunson is an active fighter, and he comes out and he looks good. I mean, Derek, really the only clear loss Derek Brunson's had in the last 3 years was against Robert Whittaker, who's the interim title holder. So I think this is a tough matchup for Leota Machida, but I think I also think it's a great matchup too to see exactly where he's at. If Leota Machida can hang with these big boys like Brunson, and if he does somehow manage to pull out a win, I would consider it a little bit of an upset. I don't exactly expect Machida to win after a 2.5 year layoff, but I think this would be great for Machida, you know, win or lose, because you get to see where you're at, where you stand in the division. You've been out of it for such a long time, and I'm just happy to see him back, because I always think he's such an entertaining guy to watch, and I love seeing him fight, and same goes for Derek Brunson. You know, I love seeing Brunson fight, so I think it's a great matchup, and I think it's a great card overall, so I'm certainly excited to see Machida return to the cage.
Machida last fought in June of 2015 and a loss to Yoel Romero. He is on a 2-fight losing streak, loser in 3 of his last 4 bouts, but he is a former champion, 39 years old, has a very unique style with his karate stance and his attack. At 39 years old, I do wonder this. Was coming back at middleweight the right move? Now, he wasn't necessarily the biggest light heavyweight, but you consider that, you know, Shogun's not at the top anymore. Anthony Robin Johnson isn't there. DC might be moving up. John Jones, we don't know what's going on with him. Rashad right now isn't in the division, although there's talks of him returning to it. The UFC light heavyweight division isn't necessarily stacked with elite talent, and it's especially not stacked with these overwhelming monsters like at one point it used to have. So, you know, as we've always talked about, as you get older as a fighter, moving up would be more beneficial for you probably physically than moving down. And again, he wasn't the biggest light heavyweight, and he obviously fought at middleweight beforehand. But I just wonder, as the 2 years off, if maybe during those 2 years he could have put on the weight a little bit more properly instead of just eating cheeseburgers and, well, whatever they eat in Brazil besides bananas and, you know, follow. Again, no offense.
He drinks
urine. Yeah, well, now that is a drink that is a very acquired taste that I would not partake in and do not recommend to anybody. But hey, that's what he enjoys. But yeah, I just wonder if maybe that would have been a better move for him, and there could have been some maybe some better matchups there as far as more winnable matches. But because as you guys both point out, Derek Brunson is a tough, tough fighter. I don't think he beat Anderson Silva, but he gave Anderson Silva a tougher fight than many of us expected. This is going to be a good test for Lyoto to see where he stands. Unfortunately, I feel that if Derek Brunson comes in wanting to either wrestle or if he's going to deliver Clark Lyoto, I would hate if Lyoto says, yeah, I'm done fighting, because he's there to watch, not necessarily because he gets so much action, but because he's so unorthodox than anything we've ever seen. I would just hate for him to come back and say, okay, that's it, I'm done. I would like to maybe see him have a couple more matches before he decides to hang up the gloves, but we'll see how it goes with him there.
If I can jump in on that real quick. This is something that I really hadn't thought about until you just brought it up now, and I agree. I think maybe the light heavyweight division would have been a better return for Lyoto Machida, especially because he's a guy who kind of relies on his speed and his, just fighting at distance, I think that would work out a lot better in light heavyweight division, where a lot of guys are more willing to stand up and fight on the feet, as opposed to at middleweight, where you have, a lot of the top contenders at middleweight are really grapplers. You see Yoel Romero, Jacare, Chris Weidman, these are guys that are looking to take you down or put you up against the cage and submit you. And I think, the way that Lyoto Machida's game has developed over the years, it really does favor him more to go to the light heavyweight division, where, as you said, one, he doesn't have to cut weight, and two, he's got a lot more guys up there who are more willing to keep the fight on the feet. Guys like Jimmy Manoa, guys like Alvin St. Preux, not necessarily gonna want to keep it standing, but these are guys that are not necessarily looking for takedowns on a guy like Lyoto Machida. So maybe the size difference would not be as much of a factor at light heavyweight, especially in this day and age when, we've talked about ad nauseum that 205 is really one of the thinnest divisions in the UFC. So I'm completely in agreement. I think maybe Lyoto should have thought twice about returning at middleweight and perhaps given the 205-pound division a second thought.
Yeah, I would just think maybe that would have been more official for him. But you know what? The Dragon might actually prove us wrong and show that the Dragon is here and he's ready to make a run at 185 like he was trying to do when he first moved down there. That is why they fight, so we can see how it plays out. Also, to see how this plays out, this is an interesting matchup here. In the co-main event, we got Damian Maia taking on Colby Covington. Damian Maia coming off an unsuccessful try at Tyron Woodley's welterweight championship, still one of the best jiu-jitsu practitioners in the world in the weight division, taking on an upstart fighter in Colby Covington. This right here could be an interesting matchup. If Maia wins, it wasn't a good showing, but it kind of shows he's still there at the top of that welterweight division, at least for now. If Colby wins, maybe just like Darren Till, he's proven that, hey, it's time for these older guys to move out the way, and those young fighters are ready to take over the division. David, what do you make of the co-main event?
Oh, I think it's a great co-main event, but I'm really interested in seeing how Damian Maia does against Colby Covington's takedown defense, because Damian Maia in his last fight against Tyron Woodley, Tyron Woodley stuffed 24 takedowns. Damian Maia was 0-for-24, and I think this fight is telling. Is Tyron Woodley or was that all Damian Maia? You could say Damian Maia was just putting his heart and soul in trying to get these takedowns against Tyron Woodley. But I feel like if we see how Colby Covington's takedown defense is against Damian Maia, I think maybe then you look at Damian Maia, a guy who's turning 40 years old next week. He's turning 40 next week. So I think this is a fight that's going to be really telling of where Damian Maia stands in his career, if it's sort of maybe the better days of his career are done. And Colby Covington, he's another great fighter. He just beat Dong-Hyun Kim a few months ago, and this is a big fight for him. This is a huge fight for Covington, and this is a fight I'm really interested in seeing because I just want to see just where Damian Maia at right about 40 years old, just where he is in his career. So I think this is a very interesting fight. And this is a fight, you know, that I think we should pay close attention to, because Damian Maia, a guy who's just been so good the last few years, and he just came up with a pretty lackluster performance against Tyron Woodley. You know, just to see where Damian Maia is at in his career. You know, so I think this is a great matchup for both fighters to see where Covington is in his career and where Maia is career. So I think this is a good one to watch out for.
Yeah, I certainly agree. I think this is a tailor-made matchup for a guy like Colby Covington, not in terms of being a good matchup on paper, but in terms of, we've seen this from the UFC, is that they like to match up these old lions against the up-and-coming guy. And Colby Covington has, the same opportunity that Darren Till had recently in beating a guy who's, a recent title contender and a guy at the top of the division, a guy who's been very dominant for the last few years, and taking some of that shine away from that name. Use Damian Maia's name to build up your own. So I think that it's a great opportunity for a guy like Covington, and I love seeing those guys in that type of situation, because they're going in there like it's their title shot, like it's the most important fight in their career. And, a guy like Damian Maia, he's, as David said, maybe we don't know if his best days are behind him, but maybe he's going in with the mindset that, okay, I kind of need to do this to revitalize my career or save whatever I have left in this MMA game. So I do like the clash of mentality that's going in on this fight. And we see it over and over again and time again. And, a lot of the times, more often than not, I think the big name guy wins. A lot of times these old lions shut out the up and coming guy, but just that once in a while, a guy like Colby Covington might come in there and shock the world. And now you have a brand new star in your hands. So I love this type of matchmaking, especially, Maia coming off a title loss and a very unimpressive one, as we've talked about. So I don't think this is a guy that's, necessarily in any form of title contention. So I think at this point he's just doing like the fun fights and seeing what he can do. And, I certainly love the specialists in a guy like Damian Maia. He does one thing and one thing really, really great. So if he can still be that guy who does that kind of a thing in the octagon, more power to him. But I would like to see if Colby Covington can go in there and step up and steal a little bit of Damian Maia shine.
This is going to be interesting because it is in Brazil. The crowd obviously is going to be behind guys like Machida, Maia, and all the other Brazilian fighters on the card. There is something about the fight in front of your hometown, having a crowd behind you, the pressure it puts on the visiting fighters, and just the atmosphere itself. We've seen and we've also heard from other fighters that say when they go to Brazil, it's very tough to kind of comprehend the level of the excitement and the pressure that you're going to get from the fans, as far as the booing and the constant cheering and the energy that they're just going to give their fighters. So it is going to be interesting to see, out of all these fights, for all the non-Brazilian fighters, which ones are able to overcome that atmosphere and put on a good performance, and which ones might actually fold to it and not necessarily put on the performance and maybe even not come out with a victory here. It's nothing new. We've seen it time and time again when the UFC goes to Brazil, how it plays in favor for the Brazilian fighters. Plus, down in Brazil, they kind of give the Brazilian fighters this homegrown supplement and kind of say, if you guys take this, we won't tell nobody, just as Vitor Belfort, how that works out for him. So it is going to be interesting. Also on the card, we got Jim Miller, Thiago Santos, John Lineker as well. So this is a pretty good card, and as it was brought up, it is going to be on Fox. So for all of you guys out there listening, tune into the UFC Fight Night on Fox this weekend from Brazil. It's going to be a good fight. If nothing else, the atmosphere itself is going to be worth checking out. The Brazilian fans, kind of like the Irish fans, they are rowdy, they are loud, they are very passionate, and they love to support their fighters. That itself makes the event feel a little bit more special, even if the fights aren't necessarily Hall of Fame-worthy classics. Real quick, guys, before we close out the show here, I want to ask you both these two questions. Excuse me. Next week, UFC 217 coming from Madison Square Garden. Obviously, next week's show, it will be pretty much all that unless anything dramatic comes up. But I wanted to ask this. It's the UFC's second time in New York. It's three title fights on there. Of course, Bisping, GSP is the big one. Do you guys feel like maybe the buzz for the UFC going back to Madison Square Garden isn't as high as it was the first time. Of course, when it's your first time, we all remember our first kiss. But still, it's only the second time it's been to Madison Square Garden. And I don't know. Like, yeah, in the MMA world, we're excited about it and we're looking forward to it. It just doesn't feel like it has that buzz like it did last year. Is it just me not being in touch with everything, or do you guys maybe feel the same way? David, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, last year you had Conor McGregor versus Eddie Alvarez, a fight that generated 1.3 million pay-per-view buys. This fight is not going to get anywhere near 1.3 million. GSP, the highest GSP's ever headlined was the Diaz fight, which I think had 900,000 pay-per-view buys, and this isn't even going to be like the Diaz fight. I think you're looking more, maybe 650,000 buys, 700,000 buys. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think overall it's a great card, and I'm really excited. One of the best cards of the year, in my opinion. But, yeah, I don't think the UFC has – I mean, GSP has just been out of it for so long, and Michael Bisping has never been a huge draw in pay-per-views. You look at his fights against Luke Rockhold and his fight against Dan Henderson last year. Both fights had about 300,000 pay-per-view buys. So Bisping isn't a huge draw when it comes to pay-per-views, and GSP's been out of it for so long, it remains to be seen. And also, I was on Ticketmaster yesterday out of curiosity looking at tickets, and there's a ton of tickets available for this fight, a ton of nosebleed tickets. The tickets start at $200 for the nosebleeds, and there's a ton of them available. So this is a card that I feel like it's a fantastic card. It's a great card, and I'm just as excited for this card as I was last year. But I think, you know, I feel like GSP has just been out of it so long, and Michael Bisping is just not a huge draw. And the lighter guys like Cody Garbrandt and AJ Dillashaw, they've never been huge draws to the mainstream eye. So I'm excited for the card. Don't get me wrong. I think it's a great card, but I really think that this isn't going to be the huge money maker that we at one point thought it was going to be, like a couple months ago when they first announced it. We're closer to the fight, so we can gauge the interest now. And I just feel like from the mainstream eye, there's just not a ton of interest in this card, and which is really sad because it's such a great card. You know, the Jon Jones versus Cormier rematch was the biggest card of the year. And I think this is – and I'm more interested. I'm more excited to see this card. I was really excited for the Jon Jones DC card, but I'm really excited for this one. And, you know, it's a little disappointing to see that there's not a lot of hype, especially when the press conferences have been so fun for this one too. Having attended one of the press conferences at T-Mobile, you know, I feel like the UFC has done a lot. They've done all they could, and I just think there's so many variables – as to why this fight isn't as big as it should be. But I'm still excited regardless. I don't think it's going to be a huge blockbuster event like it should be, like it deserves to be, but I'm still excited for the event.
Well, I'm certainly excited for the fight as well. I mean, I don't think it's quite as big as UFC 205 was last year. I mean, if you remember on the prelims, Khabib Nurmagomedov was fighting Michael Johnson, and then Frankie Edgar was fighting Jeremy Stephens. So these are, you know, the fight card was so stacked that these guys didn't even make it onto the pay-per-view. And, you know, I don't think 217 is quite as stacked, but it certainly, I mean, we still have three title fights on the line. Joanna Jędrzejczyk, Cody Garbrandt, and Michael Bisping all defending their titles. And then we have, top welterweight contender Stephen Thompson and Jorge Masvidal, an absolute beast of a matchup. So, but then, you know, it just kind of trickles down, you know, when you get to the prelims. So I think that itself tells me that the fight card itself is not as strong as it was a year ago. But, you know, how do you compete with a Conor McGregor? You're certainly never going to do, the same numbers as Conor McGregor without Conor McGregor fighting. So there's certainly that to take into consideration. And as I kind of hinted at earlier, the UFC is doing some surveys, you know, with people who buy pay-per-views. And it found out that a lot of the new fans who buy pay-per-views were not around when George St. Pierre was the dominant welterweight champion. So a lot of fans have to be reintroduced to a guy like George St. Pierre, you know, as crazy as it might sound. And I think the UFC is dropping the ball there. You know, I think very often the UFC will put out these free old fights on YouTube, on their YouTube channel. And they really haven't done that with George St. Pierre, you know, so far. So I think there's a little bit more that the UFC can do to market to, you know, to these fans who really need to be reintroduced to a guy like George St. Pierre. And, you know, I think the fighters are doing okay. You know, Michael Bisping and George St. Pierre, you know, the press conferences are somewhat entertaining. I think most of us can see through that it's fake beef, but it's still kind of just funny to watch, you know, Michael Bisping just running circles around George St. Pierre and George just not really knowing what to do in response. But I think the UFC marketing can really do a little bit more to just kind of, hey, you know, this is a big deal. You know, George St. Pierre, one of the most prominent champions of the UFC's history, is coming back. And, you know, I think it would have been smart for George St. Pierre to come back in a Canadian setting, you know, maybe in Ontario or Montreal, but, you know, that's really not going to happen. So, you know, the next best thing is New York City. So hopefully, you know, on fight week, we'll see a little bit more buzz of brewing, but this is also the problem with the UFC putting on so many shows that you really only have about 6 days to build up a fight, because you're focusing right now on this Damian Maia and Colby Covington fight card and, you know, Lyoto Machida, that you're really not jumping the gun and talking about UFC 217 when really that's the fight that you want to sell to both the casuals and the newer fans. I don't know if we lost Kalani again, but yeah, I mean, we're certainly going to be talking a lot about UFC 217 in the next week or so. So I really look forward to that. And David, do we still have you on the line?
Yeah, I'm still here. Okay. We got a lot of good fights coming up really soon too. I mean, not just that, but I think Ryan Bader is fighting the night before. You know, so you got a